does intellectual property include software? And if it does, how and where can I go and create software at a reasonable cost that I would own all rights to, that has a specific application that I can either give away in order to create and build a list, sell, or even better, give access to via a membership type of website to make money?
Well, the answer is yes. Software, by its very nature, is intellectual property. It's generally covered under copyright, unless you have very complex software which gets into some systems or processes which may even spill over into some patents, but those are very complex situations. If you develop the software from scratch, it is your intellectual property, depending on how you apply it. If it's software that is licensed out to individual users, you see that is the most typical type of licensing agreements. Anytime you get software from any manufacturer for your computer, you'll see a license agreement that pops up that basically says it's for your use only. Beyond that, if you have a software application, let's say, that's going to be distributed online, there's many business models that can be used. You can license it to individuals. You know, there's many licensing models that are used for software. There's some that have the model that allows you to download and keep the software resident on your computer. There's others that require you to renew the license every year because there's upgrades. And so they develop the software in such a way that it will expire unless you upgrade on it. There's other licenses that are user licenses that charge a fee depending on how many users are going to be accessing that software and what it's used for. So those are different types of models that can be applied toward your software. And then, of course, there's the license model where if you develop the software and ultimately decide that you don't want to be involved in the distribution of it, whether it's online or direct to the consumer, you can license it to other publishers, if you will, who will produce the software and then in turn market it and sell it directly to the end user.
Rand, how do I set up a system to control the royalties?
Systems to control royalties. If you're licensing out, and you have a number of licensees, there's many different ways you can address that. Typically, it's handled through an accounting system, spreadsheets in which you're tracking your licensees. Keep in mind that when you license, you have multiple contracts. And what you want to do is you want to plug in all the key terms so that you understand what products they have, what dates they're supposed to meet. And as far as royalties, if you have them quarterly or annually or monthly, whatever it is, you want to have some kind of system where every month or every quarter, you can track and make sure that your licensees are reporting. Typically, in a license agreement, you'll require reporting on a quarterly basis, meaning at the close of whatever quarter you decide, if it's a calendar quarter, 30 days later, they're supposed to send in a royalty statement. And generally, those are then input into, you know, obviously computers are the best way to keep track of the royalties, and then ideally setting up an accounting system. Now, there are some very elaborate licensing systems out there, contract management systems is what they're called, that can be very complex and detailed that will do everything from do your database relationship management and will track everything from your initial correspondence through your deal memos all the way into your issuing your contracts, setting up your royalty databases, and following along with product approval and everything. But typically those type of systems are something that are used by larger companies.
How would I know if an agreement I'm offering is a fair one that is industry standard and not unduly slanted to the other party's benefit?
Well, licensing deals really come down to negotiation, and it's win-win. There isn't really any industry standard. There's averages and royalty rates and things like that. But at the end of the day, and, you know, I talk about this in all of my audio products when we get to contracts, and it's an important point to keep in mind. It's really about a win-win situation. Typically, when you negotiate a contract, what you're looking for is to form a partnership. And when it comes down to how much royalty they're going to pay, the guarantees, monies to be advances, that's all negotiated. And what's fair is something that's agreed to by the parties that have been agreed to through good negotiations, through creating a positive relationship. Beyond that, I wouldn't rely too heavily on industry averages because really when it comes down to it at the end of the day, no two licensing agreements are ever the same.
Here's a good question. Rand, my concern in working with and licensing intellectual property, especially from smaller unknown companies, has to do with a best practices process for identifying and determining who actually owns the property. Is there a way, short of spending thousands on legal fees, to protect yourself from lawsuits to know that this person really owns the intellectual property?
We're getting into some good contract questions. I had mentioned this earlier on. There's something called warranties and representations. let me step back and say this goes back to that part about looking at the three key issues that you need to understand about licensing. One of them is doing the due diligence to make sure you understand who owns what rights. But also within the contract, there's something called warranties and representations. Now, that's just a fancy term for saying that if I have an intellectual property and I'm licensing it to you, I'm going to give you certain guarantees, such as I own the property, I have all the rights, there's no third-party claims, things like that. I'm also going to give you some warranties that say if for some reason some third party steps forward after you've gotten the license and says, no, no, you're in violation, you can't do that because they don't really own the rights to it, I'm going to handle all the legal costs associated with that. It's called representations and warranties. It goes inside every standard licensing contract, and it's to address that very issue, to make sure that if you acquire a license from somebody, some organization, that they in fact do have the rights to it or own it or can do what they say they can do with it. In the event you're approached or sued by somebody else who says, no, they didn't have the rights to do that, that licensor will then take responsibility for handling that legal situation.
Rand, so many brick-and-mortar businesses are clueless when it comes to marketing their businesses online. I know there has to be an opportunity for licensing with them, but I'm stumped as to what and how and where to begin.
Okay, good question. The answer is yes. That's a distribution channel. I think it goes back to one of the discussions we had on an information product where you could approach a brick-and-mortar operation. Now, this is kind of a hybrid license because really what you're doing is you want to set up an internet or online presence under the brand of a brick-and-mortar operation for the purposes of, I'm assuming, selling the products that they sell. It's a licensed distribution deal is what it is. Okay, licensing covers many things. In this case, it would be a licensed distribution deal. It says you'll have the rights to online distribution using our name for the products and services. So, yes, that can be done depending on the nature of the company. And, by the way, there's many companies out there that don't handle their own online stores and things like that. They license it off to some third party who manages all of the internet components of it. So that is a fairly common strategy.
What steps should a software designer take to protect their intellectual property?
Well, I think this goes back to an earlier question, and really software is something that can be protected under copyright. And that's generally the predominant intellectual property registration that's done for software is copyright. Now, in the case that they've created a brand, of course, they could do a trademark, but typically it's a copyright. In some cases, the software isn't even registered with a copyright because they don't want to divulge the source code, in which case it's just kept confidential, and those that receive the software are under a license agreement not to duplicate or resell that software.
Rand, how do you overcome a prospect's reluctance to license something they believe that they can create for themselves or they claim they don't like to pay royalties?
Well, I'm not sure that you can necessarily overcome a third party or a company that says, listen, I'm not going to pay you royalties. Some companies are very understanding or they like licensing and others don't. You know, there's many companies that have a policy of not licensing anything, and there's other companies that have policies of licensing a big part of what they produce. So it just depends. I mean, I think if you run into a situation where you have a company that doesn't do any licensing, I don't think that there's really anything that you need to be discussing with them because that happens to be their position, and I would, you know, recommend that you just move on and find a company that is interested in licensing your intellectual property.
I think what they want to know, how fast can we get a license?
You could get a license in a matter of hours. Let me qualify this. You could get a license in a matter of hours or months. Now, when we talk about getting the rights to an intellectual property, in many cases, I've worked deals where you submit a proposal, you go back and forth, and in the course of a week or two, we've agreed on the terms. And so it's created a deal memo. And so, in theory, we've accepted a deal, and so now we're ready to move forward. Now, we technically haven't acquired the licensing rights until what's called the long-form contract, the licensing agreement. And in my audio programs, Licensing Mastery, Intro to Licensing, and the others, I have copies of those long-form agreements. Until that agreement is signed, you don't officially have the licensing rights. But you have the ability, and there are circumstances where you can negotiate the terms of a deal in as little as a few hours. And I've also worked on deals where it's taken years to put those deals together, which is not uncommon. It runs the scale, and it all depends on the type of intellectual property. Some movie deals take a long time. Some TV deals are shorter. Some inventor deals can be very quick. Music deals could take a little longer. Book deals might take a few months. It all depends on the nature of the organization, what kind of rights you're asking for. Is it a complex deal? Is it a simple deal? And how many other licensees are involved?
Hi, Rand. What are things that are not possible to license and anyone is able to use freely? Also, is there a secret insider source for finding expired licensing stuff, or is it the same as public domain material?
Good question. Anything in public domain doesn't require a licensing agreement. Public domain, by its very nature, is just that. It's available for the public. Here are some tricks. If you're interested in finding licensing deals that are expiring and you want to take a look at those rights, any private company you're not going to be able to find out about. But if you're interested in finding licensing deals that are expired, every public company reports those licensing agreements. Here's a trick for people. If you ever want to research licensing, you want to find out for whatever it is, pharmaceuticals, consumer products, electronics, you want to see some actual contracts and find out what's actually being paid by the big companies, go search the SEC and EDGAR files of publicly traded companies who have to divulge all information because they're public companies. Well, part of the information they divulge, which is in the documents, what's called the 10-Ks, the prospectuses, and the other documentation they're required to disclose are licensing agreements and terms of those licensing agreements. So there's many companies out there that do nothing but research, and you can do it now online through the Internet, obviously, because you have pretty good search tools that can go through that. That's one way to discover licenses that are expiring. It's because of the nature of licensing, it's not like there's a central database or anything like that that talks about expiring licenses, but there are ways in which you can find out if licenses are coming available. Of course, contacting direct, sending an email, finding out what categories are available, that's a possibility to learn about it. Again, it's a very fragmented market, so a lot of it is just doing some due diligence, asking some questions, sending some emails, and finding out what's available.
Rand, what would be a good example of a relatively simple licensing scenario that the average but determined Joe could arrange in just about any local small town economy to get into profit as quickly as possible?
Good question. Well, I think if you're looking for a localized license, okay, I think it goes back to a couple of the examples we had shared earlier about swimming pool company, but look around, and I shared this earlier about a restaurant that I'm working with in the New York area. You know, there's a lot of locally established businesses that have a good name, have been around in the community 10, 20, 50, 100 years, and have just focused primarily on what their business is. Let me use restaurants as an example because they're a good offshoot. There's many restaurants that have been around forever and established a good brand name. Restaurants, by their very nature, have a lot of potential licensing deals in them. They have recipes, sauces, foods. These are all opportunities that exist. If you're looking for a quick license and you want to get into the food business and it's a localized market, why not find one of these restaurants that's been around forever, has a great reputation, is very popular? They may not be interested in developing their own products and selling them. They may have them just in the restaurant, but they've never thought about taking them to retail. Great opportunity, because oftentimes in local communities, the big retail chains that are there have room or are looking for local community products, because that's what people are looking for today, are local products. So you want a quick turn, go find a restaurant that's been very popular, find out what they've been doing with their recipes, their sauces, their special dishes, and go in and do a licensing deal. Then turn around and do some quick mock-ups, go to a couple of local retailers and say, hey, this restaurant's been around. Would you be interested in carrying the barbecue sauce or the hot sauce or the chili sauce or the prepared foods? You may be surprised to find out that they would love to carry those because that restaurant's well-known and they feel that there could be a real good market for shoppers to come through who have enjoyed eating at that restaurant and would now like to purchase some of the sauces or prepared foods that are being created from the recipes at that restaurant.
There's a restaurant here that is just kicking butt called Phil's Barbecue. Started in a tiny little house, and they just opened up their second restaurant. The line out the door, 2 hours. And I don't think they have a barbecue sauce that's distributed locally here in San Diego. But let's say I negotiated a licensing deal to market their barbecue sauce. What are you going to tell me as my licensing coach? What am I looking for? Am I looking for exclusivity for a certain time period and where no one else can market the barbecue sauce?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I would advise you on. First of all, you know, find this restaurant. Ideally, you would like to get exclusivity on that barbecue sauce.
Let me ask you this first. Sorry to interrupt. Before I discuss it with them, would I do a non-disclosure agreement so they don't steal my idea and just market their own barbecue sauce?
Well, not really, because what you're talking about is going to them and say, look, I'm interested in going to retail with what you have. Remember, especially if they're a local restaurant operator, and this really holds true for any number of restaurant operators, If they were going to go to retail with their products, they would have already done it, especially if they've been operating for 20, 30 years. You've got to remember that it takes time and money and energy for them to go. So if they haven't done it by now, then they aren't going to do it. Second of all, you coming to them and asking them, say, you know, I'd be interested in licensing the brand. This is a great opportunity for them because this is found money. Okay, this is found money. Plus, you're going to be managing an aspect of their business that they just are not prepared to do. So it's not a question of you walking up to them and saying, you know, I'd love to take your sauce to retail. Believe me, they probably have already thought about it, but they just don't have the resources to do it. Now, they may not have thought about licensing. So if you went to that restaurant and you spoke to them, suddenly they will go, wow, you know, I hadn't thought about it. What is involved with this licensing? How does this work? There's your opportunity. What I would advise you to do is talk to them. Well, I see you've got sauces. I mean, be prepared. First of all, before you walk in there, don't just walk in there and say licensing and then not have a plan. Understand who the restaurant is. Take a look at the local retailers and see if there's rooms on the shelf. You can do some due diligence and find out if there would be some interest. And then when you go to that restaurant, you use this idea of barbecue. Well, obviously, a big part of barbecue is sauces. You know, you've got many different variations of sauces. And then in addition to barbecue, maybe they're known for their barbecue brisket or their chicken or their whatever their menu has created could be something that they're known for. So when you go in there, have a plan of what you would like to do. And then also some of the things you have to look at. Do they have a well-known brand name? You know, is this name of the barbecue place been seen on the sign for the last 30 years? So is it well established? Also, you know, have a plan that says, look, if you haven't created the recipes, I'll help you. Or maybe they have the recipes, but they need the formulation, or maybe they bottled it up. So think about that. Then the second thing is, once you've talked to them about that, understand what products you'd be interested in. Is obviously you'd want to talk about exclusivity for the local marketplace. And you'll have to define what that marketplace is and the distribution channels. And then the third thing that I would also advise you to talk to them about is, if this thing can be successfully built and we can reach certain milestones here on the local market, then we would like the rights to take it out to broader markets, to regional or nationally. You want to be thinking about where this could potentially go. Now, you start locally, build regionally, and eventually go nationally, but you want to have the options, if you will, in that licensing agreement that will allow you to automatically move into those areas if you're successful with selling the sauces into retail at the local area.
And so if I'm going to negotiate something like that, I'm going to certainly have an option to do my due diligence and to do a test.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good point, too. And how it starts off is, again, this is a perfect example. You may go into the barbecue restaurant. They say, you want a license? Great. I'd like to start off with an option on a license agreement. Let me test a few of your sauces. If I get them into retail and we have a successful launch, and over the next 6 months we're able to really establish this thing and the retailers are happy with it, then what we would like to do then is expand that into a more permanent license.
So in the option discussions, do we talk licensing fee before we show them our hat and that we're able to expand and really get them distribution? Do you talk money in the option part?
Personally, if I were negotiating it, I would talk the licensing fees now, early on, before you really have a success, because obviously you could negotiate for a lower royalty rate and a lower amount of money if, in fact, there's any money up front. Here's the inside negotiating tip for your listeners. Where you want to do the negotiations, especially if it's a new license, and especially when it relates to money and royalty, is you want to do it early before the marketability is proven, before you really see what it could do, because there it's like anything else, it's supply and demand. Demand is low, okay? You don't know what the value is. So if you go in and this restaurant may not have even thought about licensing, your offer of, say, listen, no money down right now, but I'll give you 5% of everything we sell. You may be in a position to get that deal, as opposed to testing the market, coming back and saying, wow, we sold $100,000 worth of this product. Then they may turn around and say, well, wait a minute, I want you to give me some money up front, because obviously this sells.
Well, what do you sign with them if you're in an option and it's a see what's going to happen? What do you sign with them to lock in that nothing down at 5%? What kind of agreement?
Well, that would be part of the licensing agreement. The licensing agreement actually would be structured as a two-part agreement. The first part of it would say, okay, here's a licensing agreement that whatever we decide would run for 2 years, and here's the way that the licensing agreement would be built. The first part is an option, and what that option does is it gives us the rights for a six-month test window. That if we're able to accomplish X amount of sales, then it automatically triggers an extension of this contract for the next 2 years, in which we have the rights to produce and sell these sauces in the local market for the next 2 years. And for the rights to this contract, we're prepared to offer you 5% of everything that we sell.
Got it. So it's a performance. It kicks in if you meet the performance.
Right. It kicks in. And it may be that says we're going to do a test market. If the test market sells X, then we're going to give you 5% of everything. Or it may be that you do the option and says, look, if we sell $25,000 worth of product, then we'll give you $1,500 for the rights for 2 years for a broader market, something like that. But you want to negotiate your financial terms up front before you get into the market, because that's where you're going to really get the best financial terms.
Right, right. That makes sense. Now, what about, let's say I was to do that scenario. Give me some strategy in thinking about a clause where, let's say that I build this thing, I acquire the license, you meet the minimums, and it's really going well, and then my contract gives me the ability to sell the license or to sell out. Is it important to think about selling out with a licensing deal when someone negotiates one? Let's say you build it and you want to get out from under the license. You want to be able to sell the license.
It's called an assignability clause. And generally, most deals, if it's with a larger studio, for example, will have non-assignability. Meaning, if you have an offer to sell the company or you're looking to get out, then either the rights go back to the licensor, the person who owns the intellectual property, and you pay them whatever you owe them. Or if they give you the rights to assignment, then they're going to want to have an option in there to not only accelerate what you owe them, but to renegotiate the deal for the new owner. So it all depends on how you structure that. And it depends on what side of the desk you're on. If you are the licensee that says, geez, if I build this up and it really gets going well, I want to be able to sell this out, you might ask for an assignability clause that says, you know, allows you to be able to assign this license to, if in the event you sell the company. On the other side, you may be the licensor who owns it and says, well, wait a minute, I don't want to let you assign it without my approval or renegotiation or something like that. Again, this shows what goes on within the context of a licensing agreement and how important it is to think about it. There are many scenarios like that, and if you're thinking down the road that you want to be able to have that ability to move out from under it through a sale or acquisition, then that's something that you have to put into your licensing plan as you think about structuring your agreement. One thing to keep in mind about agreement, don't think of your license agreement as just a contract of terms. What it really is really an extension of your marketing plan. And the way you build a successful licensing agreement is to think about where you're going with the marketing. Because if you think about what's in a licensing agreement, it's a performance-based agreement. And what's included in that agreement? Well, think about it. It's all marketing. It's what you're projecting you're going to sell, how many years you're going to run it. Is it going to be based on unit sales, volume sales? What distribution channels are you going to go into? How are you going to promote it? Where is it going to be sold? What are the options to renew and extend the contract? And then ultimately, if the business gets sold, what's my exit strategy? Well, these are all components of a marketing plan. And that, in essence, is what your licensing contract should be. Many people don't approach it that way, but for your listeners, when you think about it, licensing is marketing. Licensing is a component of marketing. When you think about a licensing contract, it really is your marketing plan, but it's constructed just a different way in a different format. But ultimately, it's got to reflect where you think you may be going with your marketing.
Now, what product of yours covers all this?
Now, this is covered in Licensing Mastery. Licensing Leverage are two key products that you need to get. If you're really thinking about this as a strategy, then I would encourage everybody to purchase those. Licensing Mastery, it's a four-hour course. This is a very thorough, advanced course. So if you want to get into the technical aspects of licensing, that's the course you want. And it takes you through all these contract terms, by the way. So you're going to get an understanding and knowing that's how you structure the license. Okay, and the difference between Licensing Leverage is one in which we're going to be applying strategy. Licensing Mastery is about the technical nuts and bolts of how you do licensing. Okay, this is going to take you through so you understand the foundation. Licensing Leverage says, okay, we understand licensing now. How do we use it strategically? How do we build a business, launch a business, sell a business, finance a business? That's what Licensing Leverage is about. So it's taking licensing and saying, look, you can go beyond just the acquisition of an intellectual property. This can take your business into different levels. So we talk about financing. We talk about the exit strategy. We talk about attracting shareholders, building value. That's what Licensing Leverage is about. It's about how you open up, take advantage of other people's resources, and ultimately look to use intellectual property to either expand, grow, or sell your business.
Okay. Next question. Ran, I have a method that can turn knowing how to do something into doing it automatically in less than 2 minutes. It's about incorporating skills fast in a complete unusual way that everybody can do. It's very simple. The problem is I have the idea, that it cannot be patented. This was confirmed by someone that has experience in the field of protecting intellectual property. If that is the case, how do I go about protecting it as much as possible and make the best profit possible from it?
Okay, that's called know-how. That's called trade secrets. Know-how is having a process, procedure, system in place to take information, and it's either for information delivery, teaching methods, systems, whatever the case is, it's called know-how. Okay, that is intellectual property. The difference is it's non-registrationable. Okay, it doesn't get registered. In which case, if it's a proven method and you're looking to use licensing to allow others to use this method and teach it and deliver it and collect money on it, then it's all captured under a licensing agreement. Now, the licensing agreements for know-how are a little more extensive than, say, for a patent or a trademark or copyright, because they also include a little more extensive non-disclosure, meaning you agree not to disclose this information, mutual confidentiality, meaning that as part of the non-disclosure, you'll keep this information confidential, and most important, a non-compete clause, okay, that says that as part of this licensing deal, I agree I'm going to have the rights to use this know-how, to deliver this know-how, make money on this know-how, and in the event that we terminate this licensing agreement, I will not compete for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, within 5 miles, 10 miles, 20 miles, whatever it is. Those are the pieces that are put in place to protect what's called know-how or to secure the rights. Now, I have this in my business process licensing seminar that I put together. It talks about this very issue of know-how information and how you use licensing and how you would, if you will, protect or secure the rights under licensing agreements.
Okay. Another question. You may just be repeating yourself here. Where can I get sample agreements to licensing IP?
I have all types of sample licensing agreements in my various audio programs. Introduction to Licensing has the basic licensing contracts. Licensing Mastery has a little more advanced contracts in it, as well as non-disclosure in it. Business Process Licensing focuses on know-how licensing agreements. University IP talks about technology and patent licensing. So all these products have these contracts available. And I will tell you as well, the contracts, certainly you can do research and find examples of the contracts online. The advantage of my programs is the fact that I'm there being able to teach you and take you through these contracts so you understand the ins and outs and what all of these clauses mean.
Rand, it seems like such a tough, high-level sell. You not only have a product creation challenge that surpasses mere ebook selling to consumers, but then there is the legal aspect, which is daunting in itself. Where do I get the nerve to do something so outside the box?
The nerve to license? Well, there really isn't any nerve to license. It's just a question of taking action. It's not as daunting as most people think. Most people just get intimidated by the thought I'm dealing with a very large organization, or I'm asking for a lot, or this is a big deal. Okay? What they need to do is put that aside. All you're doing is asking a question, do you license, or can I get the license, or what's required of the licensing? The beauty of licensing intellectual property is it's accessible to everybody and to anybody. There is so much professional expertise that's available to support you. And my focus is, as a licensing agent, a licensing consultant, representing my clients, whether they be companies looking to acquire licenses or inventors licensing out, in that process, whether we're working with big, large, multinational entertainment corporations, distribution manufacturing companies, or small operations that are looking to license. My expertise is there as their in-house guidance, their in-house licensing person, their consultant, whatever it is. Well, the same exists for everybody out there. Don't be intimidated just because it seems like it's a very large market. And I talk about this in all my products. It's simply a question of knowing the knowledge, licensing intellectual properties, and asking the right questions. Once you have that, and once you start to get the answers, you can tap into the resources that are available to get you the right kind of professionals that are out there.
Rand, how do you handle highly regarded and trusted people who privately show themselves as untrustworthy and unreliable well into the deal? I'm sure you've encountered this in some of your licensing deals.
There's a rule of thumb that says a bad deal is worse than no deal at all. And the lesson learned in there is, if you are in a situation negotiating and it is a situation where it looks very heavy-handed and the deal is against you or you're not feeling comfortable in it, don't do the deal. It's that simple. You just don't do the deal. Regardless of what the money is on the table, I can assure you, if you do a bad deal, if you get involved with a company that you are not happy with and it's a one-sided contract, you were going to be in for a very, very long, tough time. There was nothing worse than getting into litigation and a legal battle as a result of having done a bad deal. So just simply stay away. Believe me, there's another deal around the corner.
Okay. What effect will globalization and cross-border issues have upon the effectiveness of your licensing program?
It's actually beneficial to licensing. The beauty, again, of intellectual property is it operates all around the world. The fact that there's more free trade flowing, the fact that the borders open up actually work to your favor. And you can see examples of this is licensing deals are being done now that encompass all of Europe because Europe, through its EU, has tried to create more commonality between the countries as far as the way goods and services are distributed and sold. The same thing holds for the United States, the ability to be able to work licensing deals that allow for multiple territories as opposed to one for the United States and one for other countries. So all of these transitions that are going on in the global community, all the changes of the trading laws, all the opening up of borders, this all works to the benefit of licensing.
Is simply publishing my work online in print enough to protect my property? What other steps really need to be taken? And number two, I've heard people like Jay Abraham say things like, get the rights to everything, then figure out what to do with it later. Can you give some examples of how a regular person can profit from intellectual property licensing?
Well, I think the examples we've been talking about through the course of this audio teleconference, but anybody can profit from licensing. Now, the idea of going out and getting the rights to everything, well, in some cases you can, but it's always a situation where you may find a license, you may find a small publisher, maybe a new book coming to market where you can approach them and say, I'd like to license the rights to everything. Now, if you think about that, it's not always going to be a situation that's going to occur. Generally, most of the time, in my opinion, it will not, because if you're going out to acquire the license, you could be, but most people are not going to be manufacturing toys and housewares and gifts and food and beverage and everything. It's just not something that's practical as far as a strategy goes, unless you have elected to set up a situation where you're a master licensee, where you've agreed to acquire the intellectual property rights through a licensing deal, where you're the master licensee, but you have sub-licensing rights, and you've agreed to license it and pay them a fee. Now, in that case, that's different. Then you can acquire the licensing rights. But I want people to be clear because, you know, as I talk about this, there's a difference of opinion with others who have talked about this, and that's fine. Nobody is ever going to agree on it. But in my experience, it pays to be clear in understanding what you're going to do. It's very difficult, as I said earlier, just to acquire licensing rights to every category out there unless you plan to relicense or sublicense them out. And anybody that generally is working in licensing is going to probably want to have an understanding and knowing that that's what you're going to do. Anybody can profit from licensing. And again, as a startup to establish business, if you see an opportunity, and I think we use the opportunity even from the local restaurant in your backyard, if you see that there's an opportunity here, I mean, you can simply look at that restaurant. Maybe you know a gourmet store or something in your backyard, and you can go to them and talk about them. Say, Bill's Barbecue's been around for 20 years, and, you know, their barbecue sauce is really good. Have you ever thought about selling it? And they may say, you know, geez, we'd love to carry it, but they don't sell it. You know, right there, you've created an opportunity. So licensing is open to everybody, and I think we talked about this earlier. There's no limitation. It's just a question that you understand what licensing is. If you see an opportunity, it's a question of making a phone call. So you, even as you listen to this, you think, geez, I just don't have the skill set or I don't know what to do. It's just asking a question, picking up the phone, sending an email, taking action. Do you do licensing? Is licensing available? Something to that extent. Because if it is, and the answer is yes, or it's positive in some way, you say, how can I take advantage of it? Well, you've just found out that licensing is an opportunity. You say, well, geez, what's the next step? You now know you have access to experts such as myself and any number out there. Then you're in a position to simply start finding those experts and saying, you know, I've got an opportunity to license and I need help. How do I go about doing it?
Okay. What are the pros and cons to an exclusive versus a non-exclusive agreement, and are there any basic rules for when you should choose one over the other?
Well, if you own the IP, it's your copyright, trademark, or patent, typically you're going to want to do non-exclusive deals. And the reason for that is if your licensee ever goes bankrupt, you'll have a tough time getting back your rights if it's exclusive, because exclusivity is looked at by the courts as an asset of the company. If they go bankrupt, they're not going to give you your rights back. They're going to use that to settle creditors' claims. So you, as the licensor, you're the owner of your IP, you're generally going to want to go non-exclusive unless there's due diligence done and agreement done between the company in terms of giving them an exclusive, that you feel that they're stable and they're not going to have any financial problems. You, on the other hand, if you're looking to acquire rights, Okay, you're looking to acquire IP rights. Generally, obviously, as a licensee, you would like to get exclusive rights so that you can have those exclusively and nobody else can acquire those rights. So those are the pros and cons. It's a give and take. It's a negotiation process. There's no clear-cut answer as to when and how it should happen. I can tell you, for example, if you were to go to the studios, movie studios, TV studios, their typical deals all run non-exclusive. Many of the sports franchises run non-exclusive, with the exception of you being a very large multinational company who can guarantee them millions of dollars, in which case you can get an exclusive license.
How can the owner of the intellectual property audit all those transactions to be assured he or she is getting the proper credit and percentage on each sale? It seems too easy for the seller to underreport sales, thus stealing from the IP owner. What controls can I put in place or are in place to protect the owner?
Good question. Within the contract, there are what's called audit rights. And if you own an intellectual property and you write a license agreement, those audit rights give you the rights once a year to go in and audit the books of your licensees. And that means you can go in and verify that the statements that they sent you, in fact, match their invoices. Now, you yourself don't have to do it. There are what's called royalty audit firms out there. Okay, and there's many of them, and they come in all shapes and sizes. Many of them are divisions of large accounting firms. Others are independent. Typically what happens is if you have a fairly sizable licensing program, you're going to hire this audit firm, and once a year you're going to send them out on the road and they're going to do the royalty audit. Now, it's all stipulated in your contracts that, you know, in the event that there's an underreporting, they're going to pay you what's owed plus a penalty on it. So it's all part of your license agreements, the fact that there is rights to audits, that you can audit it once a year, and it even gets so detailed as to say that you have the rights to come in and audit any day, Monday through Friday, between the business hours, and that you only have to give 3 days notice, and it can be yourself or it can be an audit firm. So it's well covered, well documented, and it's an area of licensing where you have lots of great third-party professional resources that you can call on to make sure, as we say in the entertainment industry, that we keep our licensees honest.